Hello, my name is John Owen. I'd like to welcome you to the Whence We Came Project Podcast, an archived audio anthology of American lives, both local and legendary, is told by the Americans that live them. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young. In total transparency, I know Miss Louise. We share an ancestor or two, and although it's been over 50 years since we've spoken, as we sat on our beautiful back porch and reminisced, it seemed like only last week. An educated and cultured businesswoman, Miss Louise's memory is quite remarkable, and her storytelling skills would make William Faulkner proud. Not only does she cherish the history of White County, Tennessee, her very life and the lives of her relatives are woven deeply into the tapestry of this history. Such an articulate and engaging lady, I hope that you enjoy our conversation. The kitchen was not part of that house, right?
Like yeah,
when you're...
It was.
Okay. I was just thinking it was a... I know that when we visited there, I guess prior to that ideation of homes and whatever else, the kitchen was not always part of the house. It was like separate from the house in case it burned.
Yeah.
Maybe not in that home, but...
But the stone house was just a box, you know, and on the right-hand side as you went in the front door, there was a living room and a dining room and a kitchen.
And I remember a big sliding, like a pocket door.
That went, as you went in, you had this room here, which Mom called the living room, and then you had the parlor.
Oh.
And that's where the big, they were walnut
yes.
pocket doors.
They were
huge.
In my, and I see I was 4, 5, 6, but they were huge in my mind.
Oh, they were huge to me.
Yes, ma'am.
And Mom, of course, when they turned it into a bedroom.
Oh, okay.
But on that side, then, there was a big bedroom, and there was a small little bathroom and a little bit of closet space back there.
Yes, ma'am.
And then there was a small room that my grandfather used as his medical office when he came back from the Ravenscroft mines. Grandpa Gillen was, apparently, he was a very progressive farmer. He did a lot of... putting things together to make them more convenient, you know, and things like that.
Really?
And he built a little, just a little kind of a den. It used to be a screened-in porch, and then he later enclosed it. He did all that, and he built this long walk from his house to the barn, which was quite a distance.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'd say it was half the size of this yard.
Yes, ma'am.
And he was making some headway in farming, too. And but I still farmed with mules.
Did he?
I don't guess there was ever a tractor on this farm till my dad had to take over the farm in 46.
Wow. I had no
mules.
Idea.
Mm-hmm. At that time, the local county agent, who was, set up by the UT Extension
yes, ma'am.
Office, they were really very functional back then because there were so many things to teach people.
Right.
They had to teach people how to can, and then as freezers came in, they had to teach them how to freeze things properly. I was talking to one of her friends one day who had been the home demonstration agent, and she says, well, Miss Iva, I cut off my corn to cream it and put it in the freezer. I don't cook it. Miss Iva says, therefore, you don't have to. But she says, I can't teach it that way.
Oh.
Because if I did, some of the women would cut off a whole dishpan full and set it aside for all day. And then it'd spoil. But,
So this was an operating farm.
Oh, yes.
For
yes.
A period of time.
And they came and made pictures of that little screened-in porch out there with the running water in.
Yes, ma'am.
And then there was a well. They had dug a well out there. And then they showed the long barn, the walk to the barn, and then they showed where the garden was, and they wrote it up into an article, but they somewhere along the line, they gave them some pictures of it, and so I managed to end up with those.
And I remember there was a big chicken coop.
Oh, yes.
It seemed like it
chicken
was forever.
Chicken house.
Chicken house, yeah, that's what I mean.
Listen, that chicken house was as long as nearly two-thirds of this house. Grandpa Gillen built that barn, and he designed it.
Really?
And he figured out every part to go in the barn. this so long, this so wide, this so everything. And he handed them his plans. And the carpenter says, you did a good job, but this will never work. Grandpa says, well, you just build it the way I want it built, and if it doesn't work, it's not your fault. Every piece fit perfectly.
Oh, my Lord.
And you imagine all the little pieces.
And thousands. When did the barn come down?
The barn just came down. It was before 2012, for sure.
Wow.
I'm going to say 2005 or 6.
Yes, ma'am. So it lasted a long time.
But now,
time.
That was the second barn.
Oh.
The first barn burned.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And the second one did, too.
Are you serious?
But now, we have a pretty good idea of what happened with the second one. It was, of course, it wasn't being used for farming anymore and all. And it made a really good place for the dumb people to hang out.
How about the first time, though?
It burned, and I don't remember what was supposed to have caused it.
Wow.
I don't know that I was ever told.
Now, on this that farm you're talking about, does it go back to the Caney Fork?
It's Calf Killer.
I'm sorry.
It goes back to the Calf Killer.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, my gosh.
Now, there's a little section of this subdivision. As you were going out down Oakland Drive, and you get to a triangle there, instead of Freedom Trail, instead of going out through there, if you go straight, you're staying on the farm, the original farm.
Okay.
If you turn left, you're getting into an acreage that after Bob started managing it, he thought we could get that at a really good price, and he said, I think we need to do that. So not all of the subdivision was the original farm, but most of it.
Yes, ma'am.
I think probably 35 acres or so was bought from the...
Is that farm still in your family?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't know what to do with it.
Yes, ma'am.
John, people talk, they own all of that property up there. Yes, would you like to buy it?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
It's a liability.
Yes, ma'am.
In fact, my son, the younger one, has taken it over now to figure out what direction to go, and he's in the process of having it surveyed. And,
yes, ma'am. How big was it at one time? How much was he farming, I should say, your granddad?
I'm going to say the farm up in the country was, as I remember, around 450 acres. I'm going to say this one's maybe 350.
Yes, ma'am.
But because there's no mountain land down here.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you got back when the subdivision was started back in 61, Dad says, folks, it's too expensive to farm this land now. Subdivision's been developed in four different stages.
I see.
And coincidentally, the restrictions in the first section are much more lenient than those in the back. We learned as we went.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Learn by experience.
Well, I can remember walking over here when they just were building the very first houses. I don't know where they were, but on the property. And that was before the church, too, I believe. Yes, yeah. Ma'am.
Yeah, the church was, not sure what year it was built. It was one of the first things. And I know, y'all are just going to get criticized for anything you do.
Yes, ma'am.
However well you may do it. But folks couldn't understand why we's going to let that church build up there in the very front of that subdivision. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's been a great asset.
What better place?
What better frontage?
Yes, ma'am.
For your houses?
Yes,
than
ma'am.
That big church.
Absolutely. So, when you're driving up to the big stone house, what you see across that is part of this farm.
Up about from the courthouse, half 3/4 of a mile, I guess.
Wow.
That is.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it's.
I don't guess it ever touched the breeding farm.
Oh no!
Up there,
no,
they're too far apart.
Breeding farm. It's about 12 miles out.
Yes, ma'am,
from the courthouse. All right, from our house, you go on around
toward Monterey.
Toward Monterey.
Yes, ma'am.
And instead of turning the right and going across to our farm, you just turn right bare to the left, keep going, and that's still the Monterey Highway.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm going to guess it's about between 3 and 4 miles up there, but Uncle Cass was in Putnam County.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And then about another 3 or 4 miles further on up toward Monterey, the oldest member of the little children, Uncle Jim, lived up there.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Is the house still standing for that?
Not their house, but, the one from Uncle Cass is still standing. But the one where Uncle Jim's family lived. Now, Uncle Jim's family is the daughter who did this extensive little genealogy story.
Yes, ma'am.
She was one of his children.
Okay.
And I tell you, John, she did a fantastic job. I was looking through it this morning, and I just marvel at how much work she had put into that.
Yes, ma'am.
And had she had...
There's a lot of work involved.
Oh, my.
Yes, ma'am.
And had... He lived up there. Uncle Cass lived back a little further to us.
Do you have memories of them when you were younger?
Now, Uncle Jim, no. But I, of course, knew all of his children.
Were Aunt Gussie and were your grandmother and then Cass and then Buster and all, they're pretty close?
In terms
of family?
As I know.
Yes, ma'am.
They were. Of course, they all back then, it's hard to be real close because you lived in this county and they was 2 miles away and
that's
a whole new county. We came on the Uncle Jim and then Uncle Cass, and then you came on back and there was Uncle Bob who lived out in Sparta and Uncle Buster, your grandfather.
Yes, ma'am.
And Uncle Bailey.
He was the youngest. I've heard of Bailey. Okay.
Uncle Bailey and my mother were almost like brother and sister. His mother died when he was 3 years old.
Oh.
And Granny Gillen practically raised him.
Oh, really?
So when as he was growing up, he was there so much, and he and Mom just grew up together, you know.
It's so amazing to me because I have memories of Aunt Gussie's house. In fact, I'm going, like I told you, I have the boxes that Mom had when she passed away.
Uh-huh.
And I and my children are going through those, and I'm going to pull anything that has Aunt Mattie Pearl or Aunt Gus or whatever. I'm going to bring you a box full of stuff, pictures. But I have great... I really enjoyed Aunt Gussie so much. I don't know why we were so close, but I would just love to run up and see her from my great-grandfather's house. And she would sit on the front porch, and she would tell me about old time.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember certain things about her house. I remember a really neat-looking sofa. It was in that front.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a Victrola in there.
There was. And my son in Atlanta has that.
Good.
The younger son here took it and wanted it, but somehow Gillen talked him out of it.
There was I remember her kitchen. I remember that she had both that stove that Uncle John had and an electric stove at the same time.
I
do remember that. Hello, my name is John Owen. I'd like to welcome you to the Whence We Came Project podcast. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young.
Uncle Bailey and my mother were almost like brother and sister. His mother died when he was 3 years old.
Oh.
And Granny Gillen practically raised him.
Oh, really?
So when as he was growing up, he was there so much, and he and Mom just grew up together, you know.
I really enjoyed Aunt Gussie so much. I don't know why we were so close, but I would just love to run up and see her from my great-grandfather's house. And she would sit on the front porch, and she would tell me about old time. I remember her kitchen. I remember that she had both that stove that Uncle John had and an electric stove at the same time.
Yes.
I do remember that.
You know, there was a funny story about one of her brothers-in-law. One of my grandfather Gillen's brothers, they all had wood stoves, you know. And he had a major country store out in toward Big Spring.
Okay.
And they wanted to go see the brother, one of the brothers that lived in Manchester.
Yes, ma'am.
So they closed the store up on Saturday. They wanted, but they didn't want to take the money with them, and they had no place to put it. So the brother, Uncle Alfred, I believe it was, said, well, I'm just going to put it here in the oven of the stove because nobody will think to look in there. Well, that was well and good till they came back and struck a match and started the fire.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
whole week's receipts.
Oh no, that's amazing.
I think the little family was, as I said, some of them were closer together than others. Now, I guess Uncle Bailey's family and Uncle Bob's family, even though Uncle Bob was one of the older ones, he still, his children were pretty close. His wife then was also related to my father. They were double cousins, all those children were, because Uncle Bob married Maggie Johnson. Maggie Johnson was one of my grandmother Breeding's sisters.
Wow.
So they grew up. And
yes,
and
ma'am.
The same thing was true with Elise Camp that did so much in the ancestry. They were double cousins.
Double cousins. Well, I remember something else I'm going to mention to you that you might can tell me why. My dad had five sisters. Dad grew up in Palmer, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And he was born in 29. And he's passed away now. But he had five sisters, and through the Depression, his dad was a coal miner, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of aunts. And then, of course, everybody on my mom's side of the family, which are the littles and up through, if they were close, like I was telling you before, they were aunt or uncle or whatever else, except for Cass's wife.
Mm-hmm.
She was Aunt Leaky.
Leaky Milligan.
Yes, ma'am. Aunt Leaky. She was never an Aunt Leaky. Everybody else was Aunt Mattie Pearl, Aunt this, and Aunt Leaky. I don't remember. I remember spending the night at their house one time. I remember Uncle Cass had a mule that he that was working in the garden to the left of their house, that he worked in the garden. I don't remember much about Aunt Leaky, but I do remember that my grandmother said that they were double.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow they were double
yes.
cousins or something like that.
I'm not sure. As you go up to Highway 84, the Monterey Road, to Uncle Cassie's house, before you get to it, there was, I believe it's before you get to it, there was a Milligan family that lived in that house.
Really?
And I don't know if that was Aunt Leaky's family or not.
Right.
But I know she was a Milligan, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
So.
Now, what did Cass do? Was he a farmer?
He's a farmer. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Uncle Jim was a farmer, too, but he was a pretty hefty stock trader, I think.
Yes, ma'am. Uncle Cass didn't have much land there, did he?
No, but he had some land, and not right there at his house. He had some land on in a different area, different place, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
So, in fact, some of it, his son, still, grandsons, still own part of what he owned, but I think they bought some more, too.
Yes, ma'am.
And Uncle Bob lived down here. I don't remember really what he did, his occupation. Uncle Bailey, he had ran the bus station for a long time. And then he went in with another man, and they started a concrete business.
Uh-oh.
And that's where he spent his later years.
Now, did the Breedings have a lot of brothers and sisters? Did your father and your grandfather on the Breeding side?
Yeah. The Breedings, Dad had only one sister.
Okay.
But for his parents, there was Dr. W.J. and then his brother Livingston, Dr. Bill. And then there was Annie and Lena and Dora.
Wow.
So there's just five of them.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, great-grandfather Breeding, as I said, his home place was about a mile back toward Sparta from the stone house.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's where she lived then.
Is that house still standing,
said? Oh, yeah. It's beautiful.
Really?
Yeah. As you go up there.
Yes, ma'am.
After you pass the Big Springs Church of Christ.
Yes, ma'am.
You're going to go on just a little ways, and you're going to see what says Mac Floyd Road.
Mac Floyd? Okay.
Uh-huh. That'll be on the right. Just a few hundred feet up that road is where the old church was. Now, it's just now they've built a pavilion.
Yes, ma'am.
But that's where the church building was, and that's where the cemetery is.
Up on Mac Floyd Road?
On Mac Floyd Road.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of that cemetery?
Big Springs Cemetery.
Okay.
And then when you see that landmark, you just go right on a couple hundred yards maybe, and there's a big white house kind of up on a bank. And that's where my great grand breeding grandparents live.
And that's on the Monterey Highway?
That's on the Monterey Highway.
Okay.
You're going to see a lot of white fences. In fact, the white fencing runs almost back down to where you would have turned to go over to the old cemetery.
Oh, wow.
And so when you see those white fences, and there's a story from behind that, too.
Yeah, please.
That was where great-grandfather breeding, it's his home place, and that's where my Aunt Dora then lived there and her family. But these white fences, when I was working at State Farm, I had a fella come in from Florida, and he told us where he was and what property he'd bought. So my boss, at that time, Bob Reading had already retired, and I continued to work for the new agent. He called me in there, and he said, you might be interested in this. Said, I think this fella has bought your old home place. He told me where it was. I said, well, that's actually my great-grandparents. And that fella he had come in to talk to us about investing his retirement funds. He was a policeman in Naples, Florida.
Wow.
And he had, as I remember, he had close to $1 million that
wow.
he needed to do something with.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we spent all kinds of time and got our financial guy up here from Murfreesboro and all. But never could get anything that pleased him.
Hello, my name is John Owen. I'd like to welcome you to the Whence We Came Project Podcast. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young.
These white fences, when I was working at State Farm, had a fella come in from Florida, and he told us where he was and what property he'd bought. So my boss, at that time, Bob Reading, had already retired, and that fella he had come in to talk to us about investing his retirement funds. He was a policeman in Naples, Florida.
Wow.
And he had, as I remember, he had close to $1 million.
Yes, ma'am.
So he started spending his money. He put that white vinyl fence all over the land there, right on up the mountain.
There's no telling how much that cost.
No him. Telling. And then he was going to raise Arabian horses.
Okay.
And he built a big barn, horse barn, put a apartment in it for his supervisor to live in. It was humongous. And but somehow he never got his horses going. Well, the next thing I knew, he was he's going to be a bag distributor. So he started buying up all these canvas bags, you know, totes and ice bags and travel duffel bags and everything like that. And the girls and I at the office, we'd go up there and get bags that we could use, you know, and he'd always let us have them cost. Fast forward a little time, and he was flat broke.
Oh, no.
And his wife had left him.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and she had moved to town. I think she had gotten a mobile home, and she lives out down Hickory Valley Road. And so from then he was literally peddling bags. He'd go around to
I shouldn't laugh at
places, and you know, we'd have some kind of a celebration over at the square, and then people would set up booths, and he was there selling bags, and I don't know if he ever sold one or not.
Oh, my Lord.
They were good bags.
Oh,
my.
That's
they
good.
Were really nice. But it didn't last. So that's why that house is so well preserved.
I see.
Oh, and when he got through with it, he wanted us to insure the house. And so Tommy said, come on, Louise, I know you want to go see this house. We had to inspect the whole thing, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
And we got to go through it all. And he had totally no idea what he spent on it, but he made a beautiful house out of it. And the dining room we had in the back, it was the kitchen, and then the dining room, and then a front bedroom.
Yes, ma'am.
And he had taken out the wall on each side of the division between the dining room and the kitchen, and he left the fireplace there as a double fireplace.
Oh,
it was so
beautiful.
Yes. But upstairs, the bedrooms upstairs always, it was an L-shaped house. The upstairs was the same as the downstairs.
Yes, ma'am.
And so you had to go through one bedroom, though, to get to the next one. And also, he comes in there. He didn't want to change the floor plan. So he just, of course, those bedrooms were big, you know.
Sure.
He just built a little narrow hall right down beside all those bedrooms. So each person had the privacy. But
who owns it now?
Originally, Aunt Dora's children owned it, and then they sold it to this Florida man. And I think it's changed hands twice, maybe. But I also think that it may still be owned by somebody from Florida.
Really?
They're not there all the time. I have a cousin. My dad's sister just had one child, and dad just had the two. So my cousin came up from Alabama three or four years ago, and I said, you just got to go up and see the old home place, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
And we drove up there, and there's a circle drive around the top of that bank that it sits on. And so we drove up there and parked at the top of it and got out, and we weren't going to really go any further. We was just going to make a picture from the road there, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
And I looked around, and I saw a fella coming toward us, and I thought, I know what he's going to do. He's the caretaker, you know. He's looking after him. So he came up, and before he got to us, I said, I know you wonder what we're doing here. And I said, this was our old, our grandparents' home place, and we just want to make a picture if you think that's okay. He said, that's fine. Says, yeah, come on around. We'll get pictures all over the place.
Oh, really?
And I have pictures of that. He took us all around, and he said, I'm not sure they're home, but said, I'm going to go in here and call them and holler at them. If they are there, they'll come down, you know, but nobody answered. So.
Yes, ma'am.
But it's beautiful back in the back.
Now, would that have been built after the stone house or before?
Oh, before. There's a place on the side of the house that says, I think it was 1885.
We'll see. I've got a picture of it. Remarkable. Yes, ma'am.
But it's been so well maintained. And
yes, ma'am.
We had, for several years, we had a family reunion up there. And
I'm so sad that the same thing didn't take place with the big stone house.
Oh, I am too.
I know.
And that wouldn't hurt quite as bad if people came in our office asking who owns that house now. After we sold it, they wanted to talk to the man that owned it about buying that property on the side of the river.
Yes,
ma'am. They wanted to restore the house.
Oh.
And one of them was a retired naval man.
Yes, ma'am.
And there were people that could well have afforded what it was going to take.
Yes, ma'am.
But no, he didn't want to sell it. Then later, years after all of the prospects disappeared, he told somebody, says, you know, I wouldn't much care to sell that property on this side of the river. Wish you'd said that earlier.
Oh, my Lord.
But it...
So no one ever lived in it after Aunt Mattie Pearl moved?
No.
That's amazing.
They went in. It had 12-inch walnut baseboards.
Oh, my gosh.
And it had a walnut stairway. And those doors you mentioned...
Yes, ma'am.
They were walnut.
And I bet all off that farm or
that
area.
It up and used it for firewood.
Oh, my gosh.
Somebody went back one day and went by there and came back and told me, said, well, we went by your old home place. There's a pony sitting up there on the porch.
Oh, no.
I thought, well, that's probably one of the better things.
Yes, ma'am.
And then supposedly...
Did someone locally buy it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was in the timber business.
Okay.
And he bought it just for the timber mostly, but it had a lot of acreage, you know, the cultivating end.
Well, I'd love to have that stone. Just to save.
Yeah.
Just to save it.
Oh,
I'm so afraid that someone is going to buy it and they just knock it down, dig a hole, and bury it.
They will have.
And if that stone could talk, think of all your memories in there.
Oh, yeah. John, it's going to take some awful heavy equipment to knock that down.
Yes, ma'am.
Because it's there to stay.
I'm sure of that.
They could gut it.
Right.
But I think somebody would, they might have a second thought about trying to level it.
It's so sad. We actually did a home. Part of what we do in Cookeville is we salvage and save homes and barns. We take them apart and like board by board and save them for people. And then we can build things. We build things, other things, you know, like tables and whatever, out of the wood from the barn or, you know, that type of thing. We had one in Nashville where a lady called, and she had sold it to somebody in New York, I believe. And it was her whole homestead and whatever. She was in her 60s, I believe. And when they got the things out that they wanted, it was a huge, beautiful brick home in close to Brentwood, right there in Brentwood, and a lot of acres and whatever else. And the person was going to make a horse farm out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And they just brought in the largest bulldozer I have ever seen and knocked that thing down and dug a hole and buried it. And it was within a week. 120-year history was gone.
Oh, my goodness.
Completely gone. And once it's under the ground and someone builds on it, you know, it's just so sad.
Oh,
it's
it so is sad. Sad. It sure is. Well, just like our old high school. It's
yes,
buried and gone forever.
That's amazing. I'm hopeful, as I was telling Miss Daphne this morning, that pendulum swings back and young people start trying to hold on to some of these memories.
I do, too. And, you know, I never thought, of course, the older son lives in Atlanta and his wife from Kentucky, and I thought they're never going to live here. And I wasn't sure Bob and Ginger would either, and although she's from that Menville. And as time went on, just a few years ago, we were talking about selling the farm.
Yes, ma'am.
And Ginger shared with me something. She said, you know, Bob and I were driving around the other afternoon, and said, he just said, you know, I'd like to preserve something. Said, because when it's gone, it's gone.
He is exactly right.
And so later on, fast forward a few years here, and Bob came over and said, well, I found where I want to build a house. All the way down through the three generations, the custom had been, any family member that wants to build a house on the farm will be given the land to do so.
Yes, ma'am.
So he said, I said, well, where is it? And I thought it'd be back over in Woodland, you know, the river.
Yes, ma'am.
He said, I'll have to take you over there. He said, I want to build it right back over here in the southwest corner. Took me over there one day, and I said, Bob, this is the sorriest part of the farm.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no, Mother. It's not. And I tried my best to talk him out of that.
And he wanted it.
But no, it's exactly what. And it can be a beautiful place.
Yes, ma'am.
And it goes, the back goes down to the river. And he can, and he said, I'll take it. Said, I want to make a deal with the other, with the cousins, that if they'll let me take over and see what I can do with all this and do everything that has to be done to start disposing of the property.
Yes, ma'am.
Then I'll do that if they'll let me have my acreage over there.
Yes, ma'am.
So they agreed. They didn't, I mean, neither one of them had any desire to do anything, have any hand in it,
wow.
You know.
Hello, my name is John Owen. I'd like to welcome you to the Whence We Came Project Podcast. The following is my conversation with Miss Louise Young. A cemetery, I want to say Plum Creek?
Yes, that's where a lot of the Littles are buried.
Where would that be? Is it? Well, can you see it from the Monterey Highway?
You're probably not going to actually see it, but you go about, goodness, John, I'm not sure about how far, let's say 7 to 8 miles, and you would turn off to the right. I mean, it's just right behind a couple of houses, but you've got to know kind of where to look to see it.
Is it still open to the public?
Oh,
so
yeah.
If I were to ask somebody up there where Plum Creek Cemetery was, I'll have to go by there.
Yeah, there's a lot of the Littles buried in there.
I'm hopeful, as I was telling Miss Daphne this morning, that pendulum swings back and young people start trying to hold on to some of these memories.
I do, too. And you know, I never thought, of course, the older son lives in Atlanta, and his wife from Kentucky, and I thought, they're never going to live here. And I wasn't sure Bob and Ginger would either, and although she's from McMinnville. And as time went on, just a few years ago, we were talking about selling the farm.
Yes, ma'am.
And Ginger shared with me something. She said, you know, Bob and I were driving around the other afternoon, and said, he just said, you know, I'd like to preserve something. He said, because when it's gone, it's gone.
He is exactly right.
And so later on, fast forward a few years here, and Bob came over and said, well, I found where I want to build a house. With all the way down through the three generations, the custom had been any family member that wants to build a house on the farm will be given the land to do so.
Yes, ma'am.
So he said, I said, well, where is it? And I thought it'd be back over in Woodland, you know, the river.
Yes, ma'am.
He said, I'll have to take you over there. He said, I want to build it right back over here in the southwest corner. Took me over there one day, and I said, Bob, this is the sorriest part of the farm.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no, Mother. It's not. And I tried my best to talk him out of that.
And he wanted it.
But no, it's exactly what, and it can be a beautiful place.
Yes, ma'am.
And it goes, the back goes down to the river. And he can, and he said, I'll take it, said, I want to make a deal with the other, with the cousins, that if they'll let me take over and see what I can do with all this and do everything that has to be done to start disposing of the property.
Yes, ma'am.
Then if they'll, I'll do that if they'll let me have my acreage over there.
Yes, ma'am.
So they agreed. They didn't, I mean, neither one of them had any desire to do any, have any hand in it,
wow.
You know. So he went out, first of all, and bought some, I don't know what you call it, but it's some kind of a little piece of equipment that you can go. He just went in there and, oh, he's grown up, you know, around the river. He just went over in there and just chewed those all that growth up.
Yes, ma'am.
And, but anyway, he said, now, I want, here's where I want to build my house, but he said, due to the lay of this land and when we start developing into tracks, I think I'm going to need to keep my line over here, certainly, which includes a big gully.
Yes, ma'am.
And then the old cemetery. There's an old cemetery over there.
Really?
Yes. And he said, I'll take the cemetery and keep it up. Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The cemetery is Snodgrass's.
Okay, well, we have Snodgrass.
We have Snodgrass in here. Granny Gillen's mother was Martha Carr Snodgrass.
That's exactly right. I
uh-huh.
wrote that down earlier.
And
died in 1901.
Brenda over at the museum looked up what she best thing she could find, and she said the only piece, says there's only five graves over there.
Yes, ma'am.
And they're all Snodgrass. Said and said Henry Clay Snodgrass was the father of these five daughters. And I said, but Henry Clay Snodgrass moved to Texas. She said, yes, but these daughters are buried there. And said two of them had never married. And
wow.
The other three had married, but that's where they're buried.
So that's where Martha Carr Snodgrass is buried?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
She's buried at Plum Creek.
Is she?
Yeah. Those go, these people go further back than that.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to make the trip over to Plum Creek.
Yeah.
Well, two questions for you. I've taken up an hour and 22 minutes of your time, and it's been my blessing. Question number one is, I'm sure as I get home and re-listen to this, and I've already written down some, I'm going to have some more questions.
Okay.
If you'd prayerfully consider us doing this again.
Wow.
It would be a blessing for me.
Well, it's really, John, I consider it my blessing, and I'd be delighted to visit with you again.
Outstanding.
You know, when you get my age, anytime somebody will sit and talk with you about the good old days.
Yes, ma'am.
Enjoy. My next door neighbor comes over here. He'll bring me vegetables and all, and he'll sit down, and sometimes he will talk for an hour.
Wow.
And he tells things that He's a little younger than I am, but he tells things about people here in town. And I know all of them.
Wow.
And it's just so entertaining.
Yes, ma'am. Well, the second question then, is there anything that I did not ask you that you wish I had?
John, I don't think so. I think you pretty well covered it. You've asked the things that you wanted to hear.
Yes, ma'am.
And I think, now there's some things, I have some original pictures of some of the family.
I want to see those.
And those are in here. And I have a lot of things. In fact, you kind of spurred me on to getting this a little bit better organized this morning.
Well, I even got to thinking, in fact, my wife, Mary Jean, brought it up, that maybe the next time I bring some pictures, you do that, and we kind of go through, turn the mics on, and just kind of go through, and you and I look at pictures and talk and whatever.
That'd be fine. Yes, I would welcome another visit from you.
Outstanding.
Well, however many you need to.
It might be a few then.
However much time you have,
I have the time. And in closing, I want to tell you, my grandmother, Martha Little Milligan, Saunders, had this thing about her that was angelic. It was one of the sweetest, nicest, most pure people I'd ever met in my life. Mm-hmm. An angel on earth. Aunt Mattie Pearl would come over and visit my grandmother, and I would sit in the living room and let them just get started. And Aunt Mattie Pearl had that as well. And I thought when they both passed away that probably was gone. My daughter, Denny Milligan, has that purity about her, that sweetness about her as well. And I hope that she, you know, it grows in her.
Uh-huh.
But I was wrong. It's not gone. And I see it in you. And you are such an engaging person. Your eyes dance when you speak about these things. And I feel like, I know that I knew you 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But I feel like we haven't missed those 50 years. I honestly haven't. I'm so honored that you allowed me to take the time today.
I appreciate you coming over, John. I really do. Because if for no other reason, our mothers were so close to.
Yes, ma'am.
And that follows through too.
Yes, ma'am.
When your mothers are real close to a cousin, you tend to kind of gravitate to that cousin's family too.
Yes, ma'am. Just to be perfectly honest with you, it's when we end it today, I'm going to drive up there and try to find Plum Creek. I want to see the Stone House again. I want to.
You'll pass the Big Springs Church of Christ, and that's where I went to school. They put me in the third grade when I went there, and I stayed through the fifth grade.
Yes, ma'am.
And then Dad was working, of course, in Sparta, so he would bring me to school every morning, and I transferred to the Sparta City School.
And Sparta had a full...
They had the full eight...
First through eighth or
years,
whatever?
No. But okay. I didn't go to school in Sparta the whole time. But I went sixth, seventh, and eighth grades.
Okay, and then after that, you went?
Then I went to high school.
And that's
didn't
here,
have a middle school then.
Here in Sparta as well?
Yes, but not over here.
Okay.
It was back as you start out, go to the courthouse and turn left, you start out North Main Street, and the old high school was up on the hill.
Well, thank you so much.
You're
and
very
we'll,
welcome.
We'll do this again.
Very good. Very good.